again, back for another edition of Should Have Listened to My Mother. I'm your host, Jackie Tantillo, and I've been fortunate enough to have this ginormous, if that's the right word, cluster of friends from a very young age until today. Many of us women, moms. My guest for today is Mary Ellen Cole, and we've basically known each other from first grade. There were a couple of years where there was a change in school, but we regrouped again in junior high, and because Marilyn is the youngest of eight and I'm the youngest of seven, kind of our siblings all matched in the same grade. So we've basically known each other our whole lives. So welcome to Should Have Listened to My Mother. This is Mary Ellen Cole, and I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm so happy to be here.
So Marilyn and I, as I just mentioned, go way back. Marilyn is a mom, and she also had a remarkable mom. Please tell us your mom's first name.
Josephine. We called her Josie.
And Josephine is no longer with us, but can you tell us how many, there's eight children, and then how many grandchildren and great-grandchildren?
I think she has a baker's dozen of grandchildren, and I think she has almost a baker dozen of greats. No great-greats yet, but that age group is, you know, coming of age. I'm married to someone who's the youngest of eight as well, and we just had a baby born a couple weeks ago in his family, and you'd think I'd never known a baby to be born. I just, you know, I keep saying I'm helpless in the baby department. I just keep buying stuff for this little sweet boy.
Oh, that's the best.
Even though his number, like, I think he's like number 94 in my life of great nephews, of the offspring of my parents and my husband's parents.
Well, it's pretty great because it's the not to get too sentimental or corny here, but it's that circle of life, right? We've all experienced
yeah.
it. And
yeah.
the wonder of it all, we never take for granted. So Mary Ellen just mentioned her husband, John Cole, who is wonderful. Boy, that's another whole story in and of itself. But John Cole is a cameraman for Jerry Seinfeld and his show, Laughing and Talking in Cars and Drinking Coffee.
Now, what's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Yeah, there
Comedians
you go.
In Cars Getting Coffee. Yep.
So John works with that whole crew. But Mary Ellen, today I would like to talk to you about you and you as a mom and you as a child. So how about if we quickly delve into the you and John fostering Satello, this little baby, many, many years ago.
Yeah, pretty early on in our marriage, I disclosed to my saint of a husband that I've always wanted to be a foster mom to special needs kids. And he jokingly replied, like, oh, that would have been a good one to disclose ahead of time. But we laughed and did it, and were foster parents to a couple different children here on the East Coast, moved to Oregon, and we fostered one child at a time, and we got Tay when he was a few months old. He has cerebral palsy and hydrocephalus. He's an incredibly funny, and I don't know, he's got a very advanced sense of humor since the time he could talk, which he started late in life, but like I always like to point out, he was taking notes when he wasn't talking. And yeah. we're the parents of now a 23-year-old. He just turned 23. He's got CP. And he's in college, and he's got a high school diploma, and, you know, it's a wonderful success story.
It's a wonderful success story.
Yeah, it is. If anybody ever feels the need to be a foster parent, I always encourage people, you know, start by being a respite foster parent worker. Give a foster family a night or a weekend, see what it's like. It's the best, you know, it's really a cool thing. John and I both, you know, he's our son, he's our boy, he's our life.
It's a journey, and there are trials and tribulations, and I don't know anyone who's worked harder to advocate for her child than you. And I don't know if everyone out there could accomplish half of what you have accomplished for Satello, for Tay, because it's a long journey.
Yeah, another mom told me back when he was about four and in some special preschool class, and she was the mom of a 20-something-year-old with CP, and she pulled me to the side and said, Mary Ellen, it is a marathon and you are running it like a sprint. And I said, I don't know how else to run. Like, I don't know how else to do it. She said, you really have to heed that advice. And that one expression has helped me in more ways than I can imagine, not just in parenting, not just in parenting special needs, not just in, it's just come up a lot because I tend to run things like a sprint when they're really a marathon. It's really a long-term thing and you have to pace yourself. And luckily, we've paced ourselves. It's overwhelming and it's beautiful and wonderful. It's everything. Life, you know, it's everything.
You have been on this journey, and I know your spiritual and your religious background is a constant in your life, as in mine, and it helps and guides us through these tough times. I'm wondering how much of you is your mother?
Well, I completely attribute my spirituality to her. I mean, I think it's like that whole nature-nurture thing. I don't know exactly where spirituality lands, but I do know that she was deeply spiritual in a very church-going way, which, you know, I, as a young, whatever, teenager and stuff, didn't really, and to this day, I'm not as fervent going to church every week as some of my other friends are, but she was spiritual in a way that was, it was beautiful, and it was a little mystic, because she really had a great relationship with the Holy Spirit, and I always feel like, oh my gosh, the Holy Spirit's like the magician of my religion. Thank God they put the Holy Spirit in place, because everything else is so groovy right now. I feel like we have our groovy piece of Catholicism. So I feel like I owe all of my spirituality to my mom, because she really had a good relationship with God, and that's what she, that was a priority for her. And so to watch that in action is something very different than telling a kid anything about, you know, God or good deeds or trying to do better and trying to make good decisions instead of dumb ones. You know, all those things that moms try to impart on kids.
Those dumb things, did you just say?
What's that?
Did you say all those dumb things that parents try to impart on their children?
No, I mean, I think I meant to say all the dumb things that kids do, she was able to, like, she was just an example. She was an example. And my dad died when she was 49. So I was 4 years old when my dad died. And one of her expressions was, you know, people say that religion is a crutch, and damn it, and she would never curse, but that was one of her big curses. And damn it, when you break a leg, you need that crutch. And she would say that because, you know, it was the 60s. My dad died in 1965, I think, and she had 8 kids. 5 of them were 14 and under. She, you know, it was a little bit wild at our house. Always lots of love and always very safe, and I always thank God for that because it was kind of wild. And you just hear stories about things that go wrong in families, and thank God that kind of stuff didn't happen, but it was still the 60s and whatnot, and she needed that crutch. She was a single mom. She was the only single mom most of us knew, and it was a huge responsibility, and she really did lean on her religion in a way that I don't to this day, but it really helped her, and it helped shape me.
Oh, my gosh. She was thrown to the fire here, losing not only her partner and the love of her life, and now she's alone with 8 children to feed and house. Tell us about this, the wonderful job that she got.
Oh, yeah. She worked for Doubleday in Garden City, and it was it wasn't actually her first job. Her first job was kind of around the corner in Garden City Park. And I credit myself with finding that job because we were driving home from the grocery store and they said hiring, and I was just learning how to read. And anyway, she had a job kind of around the corner for a little bit. I forget what it was for. It was kind of secretarial. Then she worked actually at Post College during, like, it was probably 66 or 67, and there was a riot at the college, and they took all the cafeteria workers and locked them, not in the cold refrigerator, but in, like, the pantry or whatever to keep them safe. And so she didn't have that job for a very long time because that was her last day at that job. And so she, you know, the job thing was you know, as it is with any single mom, it was very, very challenging. And then, sure enough, Doubleday, books, right in Garden City, where we grew up, she would work Monday through Saturday, she would have Sunday and Monday off, so she worked on Saturdays, she'd work, and she was a customer service representative, and she would handwrite in script, you know, the things that we do now over the internet and over email. She would handwrite responses to people's complaints about Doubleday, either the Book of the Month Club or the service that they got, and she would, she was one of the best customer service reps that the company had.
How long was she there?
She was there until I was in college. So she retired shortly after 65. And it was a great company because it had great retirement. She was there for over 10 years. It might have even been 15. And so she was vested, and she had great health insurance till the day she died. It was a very good place for her, and she was able to raise her kids, be close by, and be home every night. She would get out at 4, and she would be home in time, you know, to cook dinner.
What a miracle. So who watched you? Do you remember? Like, were you with your siblings, or were you on your own a lot? Or
My oldest sister, Jo, lived in the next town over, and she had a house in Garden City. You would go home for lunch, and so that was challenging. It would have been really challenging, but I would go to her, my sister Jo and her husband Denny, really, I mean, you know, in a huge family, everybody raises you, and I don't, if any of my other brothers and sisters ever listen to this, I don't mean to not give them credit. However, Jo and Denny, there was a bus that would go right to the edge of Garden City, and they lived in the next town, Stewart Manor, and I could walk just a few short blocks and have lunch at my sister's house, and she had little babies at the time, so she was home. She was a nurse, but she was home. She took those years off to have her babies, and it was remarkable. And then seventh grade, you're kind of in school. Like, the school schedule worked with mom's work schedule generally.
Mm-hmm. So here you are. You go off to college. You have all these wild parties in Boston at the house that you lived in. People were always coming and going. It was pretty crazy time for all of us. And
the
then,
animal house.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. What did you study in school? I don't even remember.
I studied business management, which is kind of a regret. I wish I would have, I have very few regrets in my life, almost none. But that is a regret. I wish I would have studied somewhat of a classic. I wish I would have had a more classic college education. You're going to spend all that money. And I graduated at $40,000 in debt in 1983. So I spent a lot of personal, like...
And you had to pay for this yourself? Or did you get help?
I paid the loans off.
You paid the loans yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a bunch of financial aid, and I always had work study. And that was actually a cool thing. You know, I had Pell Grants, all those things that help kids who's, you know, because as great as that job was, a Doubleday, it couldn't have paid very much. I have no idea what it paid, but it wasn't very much. My mother went without a lot. Yeah, I was working every summer since kind of eighth grade.
Doing what kind
of
stuff?
There was a summer, remember when I was, right before we went off to college, I was a cocktail waitress out in the Hamptons, and I would sleep at your house over on the North Fork. So I could, and at that job where I was a cocktail waitress, starting at 11 o'clock at night and going until 3 in the morning, I got, all these people would leave all their clothes and umbrellas and preppy clothes and stuff, and I was going off to Boston, and I didn't have much money, and it was a great job. All the managers and the bartenders would say, yeah, it's yours, take it. If they don't come back for it in a week, it's yours.
You got a whole new wardrobe, a Hamptons
wardrobe. I got like one of those huge umbrellas. I got, you know, anyway, I just remembered that that was kind of a bonus.
If there's anyone who has many guardian angels, it's you, Mary Ellen, because you are someone who gives so much that just things, you're like a magnet. Good things come to you, and tough times have obviously come your way as well, but just like...
Well, you are one of those living guardian angels, literally. When we moved... So I'll do a two-sentence thing. We moved from Oregon when my son was in seventh grade because it was evident that he really wasn't going to be working towards achieving a high school diploma, and, you know, it's a pretty low bar, a high school diploma. Like, everyone should try to get one of those if they can. And so we found this school. It's on Long Island. We moved. My mother was already living with us. She was now elderly. She was 87 when she moved in with us in Oregon. She's 92 at this time when we moved back to New York.
You moved her from the East Coast out to Oregon. You have a son who has cerebral palsy in a wheelchair and needs full attention. And you have your mom living with you as well. She's 92 years old, and you're bringing her back to Manhattan.
And we decided to live in Manhattan because we'd already lived in the suburbs. Where we lived was beautiful in Oregon, but there wasn't a lot of accessibility into people's homes and whatnot. And Peg gets around everywhere here. And the city, I can tell you, everywhere where there isn't a curb cut, that's how well curb cut friendly it is. And anyway, so we moved back to the city because a lot of kids from the city end up at this school. It's called the Henry Viscardi School. Everyone should look it up. It's an amazing place, and it's been around
for... Say the name, school name again.
Henry Viscardi School. It's in Albertson, New York. It's on Long Island. It's 5 minutes from my house that I grew up in, and I never really knew about it. And my husband was a professor in Oregon, and he told me about a student who presented a lot like Tay in a wheelchair. He kind of lilted to the left like Tay did. He was hysterical like Tay is. We had him over for dinner one night, and that's how I learned about the school in Oregon. I learned about the school that was 5 minutes from my home in Garden City, where I grew up for 18 years. But anyway, back to you being my living guardian angel, Jackie. We make this crazy move across country. John stays back in Oregon with my mom. My brother lived in Oregon, and he helped out. We had caregivers. My sister, John was directing plays, so my sister Judy would come out because he would do very late nights, and she would come and stay for weeks at a time while Tay and I were in New York, while he was trying out the school, and the school was trying him out. We get to this apartment that we got off of Craigslist the very first night. It's windy and whatnot, and it's over on West End Avenue, and there's 8 bags of groceries from Jackie Tantillo and family. You know, love you, Mayor. Here's for your kitchen. You know, I just sat down and cried. And if you ask my husband, whenever we talk about this moment in our life, you know, it really brings a tear to our eye. We cannot believe, you know, it was just the most sweetest thing. Oh, and then I had to move out of that apartment, again, where you're one of my guardian angels. And I'm kind of independent, youngest of 8, and to do a lot on my own. And you got really upset with me for not telling you that I was moving. And I said, but Jackie, everyone in New York City moves in multiple taxi cab rides. And you said, I'm coming in with my car. You're moving to the east side. I'm moving you.
The impressive thing, because you just brush over this stuff, because I remember when you first came back to New York, and then we're going to go back to talking about your mom. But you arrived in the middle of the night. You tried to get Uber, and they couldn't be there.
No one showed up.
Or you tried to get a shuttle or somebody. You need, as to having someone in a wheelchair, a handicapped person, you don't understand how difficult and challenging it is to get around this world.
Right, until and I thought New York City was going to be such a saving grace. And to be honest with you, it's changed so much since we've been here. The number of handicapped cabs, I feel like we would see, you know, one every 3 hours. Now you can't help go out and at least a couple when you're just walking on the street, no matter how long you're out for. Now, that said, a lot of them are shysters, and they've got equipment or big 25 pounds of rice in the back where the wheelchair ramp is, and, you know, report them to 311.
The stuff you've seen.
But anyway, the world has changed, even in these 10 years that we've been in New York.
That's good. That's a very good thing,
and
it will only get better.
Yeah.
We were talking about your mom. You move your mom back to Manhattan. And she's living with you. You have your hands full. But I always remember your mom, no matter what she was going through, she was so soft-spoken, and yet she had a great laugh, and she always had some great words of wisdom. Do you remember? And do you have any favorite little expressions that she would say anymore? I know that she used to say the number 9 very...
Well, that was like, I think, a regional accent. She would say the number nine. She would say Nyan. And Mayan, instead of the word M-I-N-E, like yours and mine, she would say Mayan. But those are more like regional.
Where did she grow up?
She grew up in a suburb of Scranton, Pennsylvania. She was born in Oliphant, and she lived in Dixon City.
So what was it about your mom that endeared you to her so much?
She was a remarkable woman. She put up with me. I mean, the reality of being my mom at that place and time, and I get a lot of grief for being bossy from everybody who knows me well, and I am bossy, but it's part, you know, again, back to the nature-nurture thing, it's part of the way I grew up, too. I had a mom who was shocked and devastated for the, you know, no one really remembers before four, right? So let's even say it. I mean, for her, it lasted a few years, just the shock and devastation and sadness. And then she had to deal with all these different kids at different levels and their shock and devastation and sadness. Then she had to go back to work for the first time in her entire life. And, you know, I found that, kind of anyone who listens to this who knows me is going to laugh, but like she needed to be bossed around a little. I know that sounds terrible. It sounds like I'm trying to make an excuse for me being bossy, but it's just kind of the truth. It's like she appreciated that in me. She held me to a different standard, and she'd call me on it if I was being disrespectful, and I know I was being disrespectful. It was an odd thing. It was a different time. I feel like my own kid talks to me so much differently than anybody talked to their parents growing up. And even me, who I'm saying, you know, was a little bit disrespectful. But when you asked the question, what was it about my mom? She let me be me, and it brought out the best. She was really smart. It brought out the best in both of us during that time.
Well, because of what you had gone through, the two of you probably had a very special relationship. Not that just because you were the youngest, but she knew that you were strong enough too, and you helped her. Like you referred to it as being bossy, but you kind of were there, like her checks and balances kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that youngest in general are a little they just grow up quicker, especially in our families where the oldest sibling is, you know, like I have half of my brothers and sisters are old enough to be my parents. So that's a little weird. I mean, the youngest of that group was 16 when I was born. So arguably that's young to have a baby, especially back then, but she was old enough to be, you know, so there were four of them. And I learned a lot. I spoke about my sister Jo and my brother-in-law Denny. Like, I don't know life without my brother-in-law Denny. They were married when I was three. People would say, "Your uncle," and I'd be like, "He's my brother." You know, we were an anomaly for many reasons in the town that we grew up in. But having those older brothers and sisters were amazing to me, and it's a combination of my mom and them that helped, you know, that made me who I am. I 100% believe that, and I don't think my mother would either disagree, or it would make her nothing but proud to hear me say that, because she was a truth teller above all, and she knew that she was going through a really tough time.
What was the kind of stuff that would make her laugh? She just loved hanging out with the kids. And
she always wanted young people. Like, my mom didn't have a lot of she didn't have any friends in the town we grew up with. She had the next-door neighbor. That was her one friend, Mrs. Lambert, who was a dear, dear friend. But the town we grew up in was a little bit clubby and a little bit... There was a lot of the people I hung out with. I don't know if it was this way with your parents, too. I feel like, I don't know, you can agree, you can let me know, but maybe she was too busy or something, but all I wanted her was to have a friend that was one of my friend's moms that was a really good friend, maybe, or just even someone someone random. She had that one good friend, which really in life, if you have one good friend, you're really lucky, and I'm not discounting that. But that was another way I wanted her to be different. I wanted her to be more groovy, Garden City, have friends. You know, that said, she would show up at the Rams football. That was Pee Wee football when my brothers were playing, and then when I was cheerleading, she'd show up at every game with the sliced oranges. And she was very involved, and she loved the young people. She always used to say, "Oh, you young people keep me young." And she knew she was an older parent because she was. She was 45 when she had me, and that made her 42 when she had Pauly, and like 39 when she had John. So she had, you know, the last three, kind of late, I guess, especially then. And she loved how all of our friends, and our friends all loved hanging out at our house, also because it was a little lax because there wasn't a dad around. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. I'm not putting down. I'm not coming down one way or another about not having a dad around, but there was a...
The vibe was different. You're at the Valio's house. You're at the Valio's house.
Yeah, and, you know, at its worst, well, I would call it the inmates have taken over the asylum when it was a little crazy, and at its best, it would be all these different age groups, you know, some kids on the third floor in the boys' room, some kids, you know, we were down in my room, whatever. Some other kid was down in the basement with their friends. And everyone got to hang out and get to know each other and then know people at school that would look out for the, you know, that they otherwise wouldn't know. So it was cool. There was a coolness about it.
Did she like to cook?
She loved to cook. She was a very good cook.
What were some of your favorites?
Well, you know, I do some, this sounds crazy, but I do, she would make, every night she would make, I don't even know how many gallons of iced tea during the summer, and she would boil the water and have the tea bags, and then she'd put in, she had one of those old-fashioned lemon squeezer things, and she'd put in the lemon and the sugar, and I live in Harlem now, so I use my fire escape, I put out sun tea, and, I go and I get, you know, Santa Cruz organic squeezed lemon juice, and I totally do the lazy man's version, but I make it every night, and it goes every day, and it really makes me feel like, it brings all the good stuff of my youth back when I'm making that iced tea and putting it out in the morning. I know it sounds, I don't know what it, it's just a little bit corny or something, but it really brings me back.
And you often have many people eating at your house and sleeping at your house. It's like our house, there were bodies everywhere. But you you love to cook too.
I love to cook. I love to have people around. I mean, those are probably, you know, those are probably come direct descendants of my mother. She loved to cook. She loved to cook for a lot of people. That is very much a product of my mother's generosity of spirit.
Her love. Now, there's also a story that I think some listeners would love to hear, and you and I haven't talked about this yet, but your mom opened the doors to your home to a good friend of ours when she was in bad way.
A couple of both my sister's friends and my friends would run away to our house. That was another one of my mother's claims to fame, and because she was so accepting and she was just so open. And I was just, all this immigration stuff, I was just saying this last night, my parents, when my father was alive and even after he died, sponsored people, and they would actually live with us for a while. I know of three of them, and I'm sure there were more. Anyway, so that was the way... That was the way that it was in my household. And so, yeah, when I had a friend who really needed a place to stay and was pregnant, my mom was, you know, again, it was, you know, I wish I could remember the exact conversation because I'm sure I was a little bit bossy.
You mean telling her she had to?
In terms of, you know, just saying, "Mom, going off to college, this is a really good thing," you know, I don't know, but in any event, she did. She was amazing. She was a single mom herself. This person was not going to be a single mom. She was about to get married. But it wasn't an easy thing to do. It's a pretty conservative town. She could have come under a lot of scrutiny and whatnot, and she just chose not to kind of advance in that playing field. And, you know, that's the other great thing about my mom and not being super social and stuff that I kind of am just realizing as I talk right now, is that she, because she wasn't engaged in all that other stuff that would happen, she could just concentrate on doing what was right in her heart and in her mind.
She didn't let any exterior energy or thought get in the way, which is brilliant.
Yeah. Right. And but, you know, I wanted her to change. I wanted her to both remarry, date, and have more friends in Garden City and do all those fun things that, you know, people did. She did have a bowling league. She did go out bowling on Thursday nights, and those were wild nights on Nassau Boulevard when my mom was bowling, let me tell you.
Did she ever date that you know of all those years?
Never. Never. Not one date. And I was trying. She would tell the same stories a lot. But I'm going into kindergarten, and the eye doctor, I go to the eye doctor because you have to have an eye exam. He's got his, the big light in my eye. And he says, "You have beautiful blue eyes, Mary Ellen." And I said, "Do you think my mother's got beautiful eyes, doctor?" And he said, "Why, yes, she has beautiful eyes." I said, "Doctor, are you married?"
Oh, you are a riot.
I was going into kindergarten. And he said, "Yes, I'm very married." He shows me a picture of his family on his desk. I said, "Oh, that's too bad, because my mom has beautiful eyes and she's, you know, really great."
Oh, you're amazing.
Yeah, but I bring all that up because I was always like, it's only when you become an adult and you experience some of the things that your parents must have experienced at a different time that you can really see what made their decisions. For instance, and I don't know at all because, thank God, it hasn't happened, but I kind of feel like I've had my one great love, and I kind of, after a lifetime, literally a lifetime, my mom only died in 2011, of wanting my mother to go out on a date and remarry, I can kind of get on that same boat that she was on, like, I had my one great love. How lucky am I? I don't know if I want to tempt fate. I don't know if I, you know, and I can't believe I think that, because it was my biggest consternation with her. But you get to appreciate your parents as people the older you get, and that's one of the beautiful things about getting older, I think.
We didn't know very much when we were young. We thought we did, but we didn't.
Right.
we thought we were really smart.
Yeah, no, and I really wanted her to actually change, you know, kind of be different, and I'm embarrassed to talk about it now, but it's just the way it was. I was a kid, and I thought it was for her own good, but of course it was also a little self-serving.
Well, you were looking out for her best interests. Did you ever see Josephine, your mom, vulnerable? Did she ever open up to you because she had so much on her plate?
She, as a child, she tried really hard not to, but it was so, there was so much to do, and you just knew everything in our family. Not because, like, you know, we were big sharers and we, like, sat down and had groovy conversations. It's just the way it was, that I could just see it. I could see the toll that different things took on her. I don't know if that makes sense, but
I totally
understand.
She
didn't have to. She really believed in helping kids be kids and not burdening, and she never wanted to be a burden. That was one of her big things, you know, which I understand. But reality was that life happens in front of an entire household, and it was hard for her. And I saw it. And I hated to disappoint her. And I did my fair share of it, the way all kids do.
You were the little marching soldier around there picking up the pieces all the time, and then you opened up your home and took her across country to live with you.
Yeah.
And lucky you.
To be honest with you, I think that being a mom is something that I always wanted to do, so I knew I would be a mom in some way, shape, or form, and, you know, case in point, adoption, not the standard the standard issue way you become a mom. So being a mom notwithstanding, having my mother live with us was the best thing I ever chose to do with my life. It was really cool. It was really hard. I have, you know, my husband to thank, not even to, I mean, I have to lay it all at his feet. Most husbands wouldn't do that. We were young. We already had our plate was pretty full. And so I give him a lot of credit. But she was a good mother-in-law. She always would take, you know, if you were a good son-in-law to her daughters, and she had five girls, you know, she was good to you, and she would always take John's part when we would be having a disagreement, and she never gave advice, like you said, what's one of the things, and I think by never giving advice, kind of solicited or unsolicited, it made her be a really great roommate, and a really great someone that you didn't have to worry about getting on her bad side or feeling judged or any of that. Like, it's pretty amazing. John and I, and we have a pretty wild life. We never felt judged by my mom. When I told her, Mom, we've got to go back to New York. There's a school there for Kay, and I can't believe that we're moving you back to New York, and I don't quite know where we're going to live, and I don't quite know where it's going to, how it's all going to turn out. You know, I was like putting the dice in the Parcheesi Nixit thing, and I was going to spill it out, and she was along for the ride, and I felt terrible. She was 92, and you know, getting over a broken hip and all that. She looked at me, and she said, "Hun, children are the future. We should be totally doing this with Kay. He is our future." And,
She's so cool.
Completely thinking outside of herself. I mean, and she was coming back, yes, to her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, her great-greats. She was coming back to the bosom of her family, but she had a really cool situation where we lived in Ashland, Oregon, and she actually missed it because she had just physically the way it was laid out. It felt like it was her own place, even though it really wasn't, and she would look at the mountains, and it's very laid back there. That was her response out of the gate, not missing a beat, not missing a breath. She's a very cool woman.
She certainly was. And one other little thing to testify to her big heart and her brilliance and her, oh my gosh, my sister, one of my older sisters and Mary Ellen's, one of Mary Ellen's older sisters went to a Catholic high school together in a nearby town. And they were going, my sister was driving a car full of girls and they were going to graduation practice. And I think it was that my sister didn't stop fully at a stop sign, or she ran through a stop sign, and they got into a car accident. And Lorraine, Mary Ellen's sister, went to graduation with a big black eye. But the thing of it is I don't know how many girls were in the car. Thank God everybody was okay. But your family was the only, your mom was the only family that didn't sue my father. The only one out of all of them. And the one that
You're
probably...
kidding. I never knew this.
The one that probably needed it the most, she didn't even go near it. And we got sued by all the other girls.
I never knew that, Jackie. That is wild.
It's pretty amazing. That's your mama.
And I know that story so well. Yeah, I mean, my mom was not, you know, she was, it's undescribable how she prepared us in that way for life on planet Earth. She didn't believe in that. She just didn't believe in that. And she believes that, you know, it wasn't her motto. It's our little family motto that life is sloppy. But I believe that it's like I got it, you know, it came through her. And we have to celebrate that in this household. And there was always so much love. I mean, I kind of started with that, how, you know, it was a little bit of a crazy household. And it wasn't for everybody, but it sure was for all of us growing up. And there was always lots of love. And it was a little bit sloppy. I mean, one of my favorite stories is one of my oldest friends from down the block, Carol O'Kane, we would go to her house and get all the great food because they had really good food at their house, like the better frozen pizza and the better potato chips. And then we'd bring it down to my house because my house was so wild and fun. And we'd have we were getting the best of both worlds.
There you go. Nothing like that. And your mom certainly wasn't an eye for an eye. A lot of people, unfortunately, grow up in life with that's their motto, an eye for an eye. But that just doesn't really work out.
Yeah. She also told me there was a person that in town. My mom would go to church a lot. And the place that she worked, Doubleday, was right across from St. Joseph's. And so she would try to go to early Mass as much as she could. And the family was going through a tough time, and it was an embarrassment tough time. And my mom would always pray for that the mother of that family. And then when the real story came out, or whatever the scandal or thing was, my mom said to her, you know, I've been praying for you. I'd see you in church. I'd give you a hug. I'd try to honor your privacy, because it was one of those kinds of things that you would want to honor someone's privacy. And the woman said to her, it would have been so nice to know that you were on my side, not just praying for me, but actually doing something. And it's a lot of the sentiment that's going around a lot now in the news that you hear. You know, thoughts and prayers are great, but it's like, it's what you do. And that changed my mom. My mom's like, sometimes you have to have uncomfortable conversations when people are going through weird stuff. And you know me, Jackie, I am the queen of the uncomfortable conversation. I feel like that is a direct reflection of my mom having that experience and then sharing it with her young daughter and saying she wished she would have done it differently.
Mary Ellen Cole, my guest today on Should Have Listened to My Mother. Thanks for joining me, Mary Ellen.
Thank you, Jackie. Thanks for doing this podcast.